All right, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the our regularly scheduled conditional use hearing. This is this meeting was scheduled for Wednesday, June 21st, 2023 at 6 p.m. We're starting this meeting up at approximately 6:06 p.m. So for those in the room here, thank you for your indulgence. We are starting a few minutes late. I'm going to call the meeting to order. And Mr. Emmerich, would you just please do the roll, take a roll call for us?
Sure. Member Zimuda.
Here.
Member Perotta.
Here.
Member Nutt.
Here.
Member Lenkoff.
Here.
Chairman Bruiser.
Here.
You have the full board.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Emmerich. So we'll dispense quickly with our housekeeping. We always make this announcement before every meeting, but although it's posted within the meeting room, I want to advise all persons attending this meeting that it is and has been the policy of the township to tape record all public meetings for the purpose of providing accurate minutes. Again, as our general reminder, everybody's done a great job with this. Just please make sure if you come up to the podium to speak. If you are a lawyer representing a party, please, the first time you come up, introduce yourself, first name, last name, and indicate which party you're representing. If you are representing yourself, please, when you come up, first name, last name, probably you should also give your address if you're representing yourself. Beyond that, keep in mind that our stenographers can only really record comfortably one person speaking at a time. And so for the benefit not only of the stenographers and keeping accurate minutes, but so that folks that listen to the audio of these meetings, let's try to do our very best to make sure that one person is speaking at a time. So, as we have typically done, we'll go to the first item on our agenda, right? And it's the only item, but it's our business. We're reconvening the public hearing regarding conditional use application number 2022-06, as filed by Linlow Governor Crossing and Sheets Incorporated regarding a master plan development for redevelopment of land generally located in the southwestern quadrant of the intersection of West Governor Road and Fishburne Road. So, with that, I'm going to now, since we've called the item up, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Nelson, who has been running the meetings for us during the course of the meeting. And again, we'll take a break at around 7:30, but beyond that, Mr. Nelson.
Excellent. Before we get started, which I believe is redirect of the township traffic engineer, Mr. Stump, there's a couple of administrative matters that we skipped over. So first off, there were two exhibits that I believe were introduced by Seedlings Academy two hearings ago that you asked at the end of that hearing to have be marked and admitted into the record. Mr. Strong asked for some time to review to decide whether or not he would have any objection to them. So I'm going to ask at this point in time, Mr. Strong, do you have any objection to what I'm going to mark as SA1 and SA2, which I believe were copies from certain PennDOT regulations?
Good evening, everyone. Mr. Nelson, no, I don't have objections to exhibits SA1 and SA2 being included in the record, at least for the purposes for which they were introduced, which was for asking questions on cross-examination. The relevance of the documents themselves is something else that they can address during their own presentation, but for the purposes for which they were introduced, I don't have an objection.
Okay, and obviously, as with every document introduced as evidence, the board will weigh that particular document and see as to its relevance. That being said, I don't believe we have anything else. Anyone disagree with me? Seeing none, we shall now move to redirect. Mr. Brignere, you're up.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Good evening, Mr. Stuff.
Mr. Eden.
You recall on cross-examination, Mr. Strong asked you whether or not the proposed project would result in any adverse traffic impacts. Do you remember that line of questioning towards the end of his cross-examination?
Yes, I do.
And you recall you advised that you did not feel it would result in any adverse traffic impacts?
Correct. That was the service, and you were generally mitigated.
In your opinion, is there a correlation between traffic volume at an intersection and the number of traffic accidents that occur at an intersection?
Yeah, the more volume that you have, the more chance you have to have an accident. So if you have an intersection that has 10 vehicles entering in an hour, you're going to have less of a likelihood of having a crash than you might with an intersection with 100 vehicles an hour just by, your increase in volume.
Okay. And with respect to this particular proposed land development or proposed use, the Governor Road and Cherry Road intersection, I think your testimony was, would have an increase in volume of approximately 4%?
That's correct.
And then with respect to Governor Road and Fishburne Road, there would be an increase in volume of approximately 8%. Was your testimony, is that correct?
That's correct. That was based on the numbers in the traffic study, the projections.
Okay. And those are average numbers. Is that accurate?
Correct. It varies a little bit by peak hour, but in roughly 4% at the Cherry intersection and roughly 8% at the Hockersville intersection.
You were also asked some questions about what's known as pass-by traffic. Do you recall that on cross-examination?
Correct.
And you provided an opinion that a majority or a predominant amount of the traffic that will enter this new land development would be traffic that already exists. Do you recall giving that testimony? Most of the traffic that would be entering the land development is traffic that already exists, let's say, on Governor Road. Do you recall giving testimony to that effect?
Most of the sheets traffic that's entering the development is traffic that's already there. There are a lot of uses that don't have pass-by trips that are generating brand new trips and introduce those entirely to the road. So I don't know that it's most of the traffic for the site, but most of the sheets traffic and traffic is already there.
It's a point that I'm trying to clarify. So let me, I'll refer your attention to Exhibit A29. Chuck, if you could bring that up. And then this is page 173 of A29. Do you see that above me?
I do, yep.
Okay. And this relates to the pass-by-trip information that the applicant supplied in their traffic impact study, correct?
Correct.
With respect to this exhibit, though, it only relates to two of the uses that are proposed on the property. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's a convenience store, a gas station with the sheets that provides pass-by data for all three peak hours, the morning peak, the afternoon peak, and then the Saturday peak. And then also the high-turnover sit-down restaurant land use, which provides pass-by data during the p.m. peak hour. The other land uses, they didn't take any sort of pass-by credit for, and the restaurant, they didn't use any pass-by reduction during the a.m. peak or the Saturday peak, only p.m. peaks before which data was given.
Okay, so with respect to what's on this particular exhibit in front of you, it indicates 76% weekday a.m. peak hour with respect to pass-by trip information, right?
That's correct. Yeah. So roughly 76% of the sheets traffic would be traffic that's already on the roads. 24% might be either new trips or diverting out of their way to get there.
All right. And likewise, 75% pass by weekday p.m. peak, and therefore 25% would be new traffic, right?
Correct.
And with respect to Saturday peak, 66% being pass by traffic for the sheets, but 34% would be new, correct?
Correct.
And fi- lovingly the high turnover sit-down restaurant, and that would be the use that's, or uses, below the apartment building?
Right, there's retail there as well as a restaurant.
Okay, and so it has 43% pass-by, which would leave 50% new traffic for the high turnover sit-down restaurant, right?
57%.
57, I'm sorry. All right. And then the other uses, the daycare, the medical office, the retail that would be on the first floor of the apartment building, and the apartments, none of that, as you indicated, is expected to be pass-by trip-generated traffic.
Correct. At least in the purpose of the study, that was all assumed to be new trips.
All right. And do you recall reviewing the traffic impact study and determining the approximate amount of new traffic overall, new traffic volume overall, percentage-wise?
It was more than half of the traffic for the site was new trips compared to the pass-by trips.
Okay.
It was close. But it was close to 50%.
Close to
50%. It was a little bit more, I think, new trips versus pass-by trips.
All right. Let me turn your attention then to a new topic, truck turning radii. Mm-hmm. And if we could go to Exhibit A12 and then page, it's Exhibit 1.2. That's it. Do you agree that there are potential adverse impacts due to the inability of the larger trucks, which are the ones depicted on Exhibit 1.2, due to the inability of those larger trucks to be able to navigate certain turning movements that are depicted in that exhibit?
Correct. That some of the truck maneuvers encroach into adjacent lanes.
And the encroachment into adjacent lanes, would that increase the potential for accidents?
That could, if traffic coming the other way, the truck drivers don't see each other, or the traffic within the correct lane doesn't anticipate the truck driver encroaching into their lane.
Do you agree that if the plans were modified such that there were less uses on the lot, it could result in less adverse impacts related to these truck turning movements? In other words, would there be the ability to reduce the amount of problems associated with truck turning radii if there were less uses proposed for the property?
Yeah, so the radii that caused the truck maneuvers to encroach into other lanes are generally radii along the development frontage. So, yeah, the ability to change those radii to better accommodate the truck movements would involve pulling the radii closer into the site. Maybe that would cause less developable area or less room for buildings, or stormwater management impacts or impacts to their sign locations. You know, I'm not sure exactly what the impacts would be on the site. It may result in smaller buildings or less, no fewer land uses.
Okay. And when you say frontage, are you talking about frontage on all the roads that would surround the property there?
Frontage on along Fishburne Road as well as relocated Sand Hill Road.
Okay. All right, let me switch topics on you again, and we'll refer your attention to the southern driveway entrance to the property. And I guess we could take a look at A24. That is. Okay. So referring your attention for the record to Exhibit A24, and then specifically this is labeled as MP3.0. And I'll have you take a look at the southern driveway entrance to the property. So Sand Hill Road and the new driveway entrance. Okay. You had indicated in one of your engineer review letters that there was a deficiency related to the 300-foot centerline radius that's required for Sand Hill Road. Do you recall that indication in your engineer review letter?
Yep, correct.
Okay. And you agree that, as it's shown on this exhibit anyway, there is a potential safety issue with respect to that 300-foot, or the lack of a 300-foot centerline radius, correct?
Yes, there's two main reasons to have minimum radii around parts. One is for the through movement, traveling at a high rate of speed going around the park curb. The second is for sight distance as you're traveling around the curb. I think because this is an all-way stop, there's maybe less concern safety-wise for the severity of the turn in terms of a car being able to make the maneuver, but more concern about visibility of the stop sign approaching from that direction and you come around and all of a sudden there's a stop sign there.
And when you say that, just for the record, can you indicate from which direction you're talking about a car coming from and then coming around the turn to a stop sign that may not be visible to them due to this lack of radius?
It specifically referring to the movement coming northbound on Sand Hill towards the site driveway when you're being introduced into that turn right in that area. And again, the stop sign is located kind of just after that turn.
Okay. But that is the specific area where it's lacking in the 300-foot centerline radius?
That's correct. I believe there was a submission in March that improved or increased the radius. I still don't think it's 300. It might be, if I recall correctly, I believe it was 200. It's softer. It's a softer curve than what we're looking at in this older exhibit, but it's I believe it was still below the 300-foot requirement.
If it had the 300-foot centerline radius, in your opinion, would there be better sight line to be able to see the stop sign and then the intersection as well?
There would be. It would be improved.
All right. Now let me switch topics again on you. I'll direct your attention to the right out driveway, and now I'm directing your attention to exhibit A25. And this was another point, I believe, that you raised in your engineer review letter, but you agree there's a potential for conflict in the painted area that's adjacent to the right out, in that, I guess, we've referred to it as adjacent to the pork chop, but the right out coming out of that ingress egress.
Yeah, so the painted area coming out of that right out movement is proposed to be paved and flush with the rest of the roadway and just striped with some crosshatching. I think it would be ideal if the edge of those pavement markings were actually the curb line and force all traffic kind of into one lane and then make a decision if you want to go left through or right once you get onto Fishburne Road. It is proposed as flush because truck turns based on that maneuver will be running over that area. I think we suggested considering at least maybe some corrugated concrete there. The concern we'd have is that a car turns out there and then uses that area kind of as an acceleration lane to make the right turn and then speed up and then get into the through lane.
Okay. And do you consider that to be a safety concern? If a car were to try to utilize that painted area as an acceleration lane, would that be a problem?
It could be. When you have a kind of a weaving area, what they call that, where you have some vehicles making a right and then moving over to the through lane, and some people from the through lane coming over and moving into the right turn lane. They call that a weaving area, and as short as this is, certainly it isn't. It wouldn't meet design standards for a weaving area.
All right, and one more topic area to cover. Do you agree that this project will result in longer queue lengths on Governor Road?
That is what was shown in the traffic study, that some of the through queues will be longer than they would be without development.
Let me refer your attention to Table 2, contained in Exhibit 829, and this is page 36. You see the exhibit that's on the screen?
I do.
Yep.
And let me refer your attention to a specific row there, Governor Road, eastbound through. Do you see that row?
Yep.
At Cherry Drive, I should indicate. Do you agree that the AM for year 2027, utilizing the synchro analysis, that the listed queue length increases from 363 up to 406 based on a build of the project, right?
Correct. That's based on the synchro analysis results.
Okay. And with your same row, but you agree for the PM 2027, utilizing that synchro analysis, the queue length increases from 531 up to 738. That's with the build and with improvements. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so that's an increase of approximately, or an increase of 207 feet in queue length, right?
Correct.
And if, are there detrimental or adverse impacts to having a queue length of that length?
Yeah, so typically for through queues, the most important thing is that you're not backing up into the next signalized intersection or a major driveway that a high volume driveway or so, even if it's not signalized. But certainly, the shorter the queues, the better it is. Queues can still pass through other properties, driveways that may impact the ability at certain times of day to turn in and out the driveway. As queues extend further from signalized intersections, maybe a little bit more unexpected to stop for vehicles approaching the intersection on a through road. So that increase in queues generally meets design standards because it doesn't extend into another signal or create some of the other larger issues. The smaller your queue is, keeping your queues lower is always desired.
So for this particular project, you're familiar with Governor Road in that area and where these queue lengths will take place. Is that correct?
Correct.
Are there driveways and other access points along there where these extended queues are going to take place that could cause a concern for you?
There are other driveways and intersections along there. That eastbound queue would now be extending past that maybe it wasn't before.
All right, and then let me also refer your attention to one other row on this chart, and that would be the row for Governor Road westbound, through and right. And then looking at that row specifically to the column associated with the PM 2027 numbers. So would you agree that the synchro analysis, the queue length increases from 165 up to 405 with the build and with the proposed improvements?
That's correct.
And so that's approximately an increase of 240 feet of queue length, correct?
Correct.
And same question with respect to this area. Are you familiar with that area of Governor Road? And whether or not there are access points and or driveways?
Within that first 400 feet or 405 feet, there are no driveways or other access points. But just beyond that queue, there is a driveway. So with a queue extending that far back, when it's at that max queue, could maybe prohibit sight distance exiting that driveway. So somebody leaving that driveway would have to wait for that queue to clear before they could really see oncoming eastbound traffic.
Those are all the questions I have.
Okay. Next up, Mr. Strong.
Thank you. Just a few questions in response to the redirect. First, good evening, Mr. Stump. I believe you had an opportunity to answer questions that I posed to you at the hearing in April. Is that your recollection?
That's correct.
And were the answers that you provided to the questions that I asked you earlier during that hearing in April, to the best of your knowledge, were those answers all correct and true?
From what I recall, yes.
There was a mention in your redirect about mitigation of any traffic impacts. In your opinion, do the levels of service in the approved traffic impact study demonstrate that any impacts from the proposed project will be effectively mitigated by the improvements that are recommended and proposed as part of the project?
Yeah, the levels of service, when comparing the no-build levels of service to the build with improvements in areas, were generally consistent or better after the improvements were implemented. So the capacity at the study intersections was generally maintained or improved.
And we still have table two from exhibit A29 on the screen. And I think you were asked questions about the Governor Road eastbound through at Cherry. Is that correct?
Correct.
And the no build of 363 and the build of 406, you were asked about that increase. Is that correct?
Correct.
Is the available storage at that location 1,280 feet?
If that is the distance to the next signal, and again, that's typically what we use as measuring acceptable queues on the through lanes at signalized intersections.
So in terms of an increase from 363 to 406, that increase would be taking place in a location where there is available storage of 1,280 feet?
Correct, to the next signal.
And I think the next question was Governor westbound through. Was that at Fishburne or was that at Cherry?
That was also referring to the Cherry Drive intersection westbound through.
And so there, you were looking at an increase from 210 feet to 234 feet in the build scenario?
Yeah, I think the questions were directed more so at the PM peak hour where it increases from 165 to 405. But yes, that's the movement we're looking at.
And again, if we look at the available storage that's there today, it's 840 feet?
Correct. And again, that's the distance to the next signal. That's the signal at Fishburne, Hockersville is the next signal.
And there were several questions about whether or not an increase in traffic volume would correlate to an increase in traffic accidents. I think we can all agree that if there are more cars on the road, there's more opportunity for an accident. But you could say if you add one car to an intersection that you've increased the chances for a traffic accident. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Would you say that adding one car to an intersection would result in an adverse impact potentially?
I would not.
Okay. Those are all the questions I have.
Mr. Chris?
I have no question.
Yes. Recross. Mr. Getz?
I have no questions, thank you.
Mr. Greenberg?
No question.
Mr. Winter?
I have a few. Just to follow up, good evening, Mark Winter, JSDC. Just to follow up on what Mr. Strong just asked, if one car were added to the mix, it could increase the possibility of an accident. Is that correct?
Sure. But if one additional vehicle going through that, you know, theoretically, it would be one more opportunity for an accident.
Right. But we're talking about a development that's going to have 233 parking spaces, going to have 80 residential apartments, going to have a daycare center with people arriving morning, noon, and night, and a Sheetz that's going to be open 24/7. Is that correct?
I believe those things are correct.
Yes.
And so certainly more than one car is going to be added to the mix.
Correct. Okay.
And quite a few more cars are going to be added to the mix, are they not?
Correct. Roughly It varies by, but roughly 150 cars entering and exiting the site in each peak hour.
In an hour.
Correct.
You talked about, we're going to go back to the pork chop area for a moment. Chuck, if you could bring up that slide, it might be A24, but yeah, that's good. When we look at the strike area that you described there along Fishburne Road, I think your indication was that would be an area that a truck could encroach into as it's exiting the property. Is that correct?
Correct. The intent there of leaving that flush is for the truck's trailer to drag across that area as they make the right turn out of the site.
And is the little third part of the line second, please? So if we look right in this area here, and we see a proposed sidewalk that appears along the edge of the property along Fishburne Road here, and then just to the west of that would be the proposed apartment building with retail and railroad. Would it make it easier to get large trucks out of here if this area where, for example, the sidewalk is currently shown, if that became part of the roadway, would that make it easier for trucks to exit?
It may make larger space for their truck trailer to drag across, but I think we want to encourage trucks to make the maneuver into the through lane with their drag being kind of in the shoulder or taper area for the right turn lane. I'd rather, if we open that up more, we could have trucks maybe make the maneuver. I'm concerned about cars potentially making through here and turning out and then using this kind of that area merge in. So I think it's better to have that curb line pushed out as they have it shown so that the truck's making the maneuver again into the through lane, not dragging across the front of their truck into that strike off area.
And just to clear up two points that I'm still not certain about, who owns the alley? Have we determined definitively that the township owns the alley?
We're going to object. I don't have a microphone anymore. But
yeah, that was not part of the redirect, so it's not appropriate to ask that question.
So we'll just leave that up in the air for a while. And just going back for a moment to Cherry Drive, Chuck, where we were talking about the lack of the 300-foot radius.
In relocated Sand Hill?
Yeah, relocated Sand Hill. Well, yeah, and off of Cherry Drive. So I believe this is this area right here.
Correct. That's existing Sand Hill Road there to the bottom right of that exhibit, and then that turns into the relocated portion right there, and that's the turn that we're concerned with.
Right, and I think it's your testimony that at least on one exhibit, it was a smaller radius, but now there's a new exhibit with a slightly larger radius. Is that correct?
There was a submission in March that proposed a slightly larger radius.
Okay. And you've had a chance to review that submission, is that correct?
That's correct.
And that is that part of the HOP application? Or is that part of this conditional use application?
I believe that's part of both. Okay. Well, I think I believe it's shown on the HOP plans. It's not technically part of the HOP because it's not the neighborhood portion.
Right.
But I believe it was shown on there.
Okay. I don't believe I have any further questions. Thank you, sir.
Ms. Burns, or Means, sorry.
I just had one question. With respect to the intersections that Mr. Mayor mentioned, what would the impact of snow be, like piled snow on those intersections?
Sorry, which intersections are
we referring to? Well, all three of them, I think you mentioned this one, as well, Pork Chop, I mean, you'll get snow again someday, hopefully in Pennsylvania. So would that impact them? I mean, is there room for that? These sight lines that we discussed that are less than ideal would snow even further exasperate?
So typically, the township roads are plowed by the township. State roads are plowed by the state. Sometimes there's agreements between the state and the township where the township will remove the snow on some state roads. I don't know the specifics with the Ferry Township. The public works director would have a better handle on that.
But. So that doesn't come into consideration during design? Or?
Yeah. What can complicate it is medians, and then certainly, you know, I don't know if that road is being plowed by the township or not, but certainly those plowing the road would have the opportunity through land development to weigh in on impacts to snow removal, if there's ways to tweak the design to make it more conducive for that, and put the linear posts and those sort of things on the median so that you can see where they are, you know, when they're covered with snow.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mill?
In your redirect on the cues, mm-hmm. and the expanded nature of the cues, what do those expanded cues translate to in terms of time sitting at a specific intersection or crawling at a specific intersection?
So generally speaking, we typically use 25 feet as the queue length for one vehicle.
Okay.
Again, that varies by the vehicle, of course, but it's a good rule of thumb. So for extending the queue length by 200 feet, that may be another 8 vehicles.
Okay.
From my experience, once cars start going through an intersection, it seems to be every 2 to 3 seconds that you get another car through. So they're waiting there another 15 seconds. But again, I think that they've shown with the capacity analysis, the actual delay for that movement isn't that much longer than it was. No, with that development, the level of service there are comparable.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Newman?
No questions.
Mr. Stain? Not here. Mr. Hitchcock?
No questions.
Thank you. Does the board have any questions?
Yeah, I have a good question.
Eric, thanks for coming down.
What's the predictive for truck traffic through that lot? Because I know we've been discussing trucks a lot going through the work job, et cetera.
I don't know that they quantified the number of trucks per day. It's not like it's an industrial use or warehouse where you're given those projections. A general rule of thumb is to assume 2% of the total traffic. Between the pass-by trips and new trips, you have roughly, total external trips, they have 5,500 a day. 2% of that would be, 110 ins and outs, so maybe 55 in, 55 out. That's probably on the high side, but again, it's just kind of general rule of thumb to assume 2%.
Okay. Thank you.
But yeah, number of deliveries a day, I don't know if they quantify.
Thank you.
Eric, can we go back? Chuck, could you put up the queue analysis?
What is that exhibit number? I keep getting confused.
That's 829.
So Eric, are the numbers that appear under the available storage column, are those projections or actuals?
That's what's actually available right now, and except for if you see there's one further down, that's in parentheses, the 325 number. That's a proposed. So they're proposing to extend the lane from the existing 150-foot turn lane to 325. But the rest of those are what's there now and also what's proposed to be there after the development goes in.
So when we say available storage, that's basically based on the distance that exists in these areas.
Correct. It's either the turn lane length or the distance between the signals for the through lumens.
Okay. The numbers that appear under, for instance, where it says AM 27, whether it's, you know, all three columns under AM 2027, and for that matter, all three columns under PM and Saturday 2027, are those actual counts or are those projected counts?
Those are all projections.
Okay. And what are those projections based on? Where do they come from?
They come from the traffic model that we developed based on the actual traffic counts. And then, you know, so for the AM 2027 no build, they would have increased the traffic counts to 2027, you applying a background growth rate that accounts for kind of growth outside the study area, and then accounted for any other developments that were planned but not yet constructed in the study area. And that would have been, and then put those numbers into the traffic model, and the outputs are what's shown on the screen in that first column under AM 2027. And then you add in the development traffic on top of that, and that's what gives you that second column. And then if you make any improvements, you know, those are listed in the third. But the volumes there are based on the existing counts, but then projected to those future years with and without development.
So is it your testimony that, and I'll pick out, for instance, PM 2027, let's pick Governor Road, eastbound through. All right, so that's really the second row down.
At the Cherry Drive intersection.
Can we do, I'm sorry, that even further down would be Governor Road, under Governor Road and Fishburne Road.
Yep, okay.
So Governor Road, eastbound through. And although it doesn't break it down under, like, it's general PM, but it doesn't account for, I mean, that's a PM 2027 number, so that's, is that, does PM mean 12:01 noon to 6 PM?
Yeah, that's supposed to be representative of the heaviest hour in the afternoon, so typically that's sometime between 4 o'clock and 6 o'clock. 4:30 to 5:30, and I don't know exactly what it was at that intersection. It would be, it's shown in the traffic count data that to show, you know, which 15 or, you know, which hour had the largest volume of traffic. But it's generally between 4 and 6 in the afternoon.
All right. See, it's hard for me to process that information because I know that from 3 o'clock on till about 5 o'clock, Governor Road, eastbound through, all the way from literally out front of the medicals, from Center Avenue or, you know, all the way through the Cherry Drive intersection, through Fishburne, is jammed. There's no available storage. So the queue is already complete. Like, I just can't believe that the numbers are actually reflecting what actually occurs. And I've said this at the other meetings. Somewhere along the line, as part of the equation, that it may be that there are some actual data. Maybe part of it is formulaic, that's based on sort of a general description of uses and, of a particular development, but are you representing that data actually reflects what is the busiest time of the day on Governor Road, and that we can rely on that data? So when it says there's available storage, that we can rely on that data and say, on that second column down under PM 2027, under Fishburne Road and Governor Road, build with improvements says explain it. The 592, the slash 305, which means that 592 represents what number?
The number of feet that the queue is projected to extend from the stop bar, 592 feet back in the westerly direction from the stop bar.
Okay, and then the 305 represents?
It's the same number using a different methodology.
Okay, but, and so we can't take judicial notice here today, but the facts are that from 3 o'clock until almost 5 o'clock, there is no available storage. Cars back up from Cherry Drive all the way to the entrance to the medical center. And at times, it's maybe that's extreme at times, but definitely as far back as Greenlee Drive. I mean, we cannot travel on that road during those period of time. So how can those numbers be accurate?
I have seen that backup certainly before the right turn lane was installed, turning onto Fishburne Road some years ago. I probably haven't watched the intersection as much since that improvement went in as I did before, because I think we were getting a lot of complaints about it before. So I was out there a lot for various reasons, evaluating the intersection and the traffic flow out there. So I can't say definitively it's not backing up now that compared to what it was. And taking it to word that it is indeed backing up that far. The ordinance does not require going out and getting field measurements or calibrating the model based on what the actual queues are. Maybe it could or should, but that's not required. What the traffic study process is to rely on the outputs from the model based on the data that we're collecting and inputting the signal timing and the traffic parameters.
Okay, and the reason I highlight this, because I could make the same argument going, I have to look at the chart, Governor Road, Fishburne Road, that intersection, but if you are going Fishburne Road northbound through, and if you're on that road between, from 7:15 to 8 a.m., you can get backed up all the way to the intersection. I've seen it as bad on a normal day to where the dry cleaner is, for instance. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm not even accounting for summer concert traffic, summer park traffic. Just talking about regular day of the week in March. And so I don't know what to do with this information because it cannot be accurate. And maybe holistically, when you look at the large picture, we take a big chunk, a PM is a 6-hour time frame or an 8-hour time frame, or maybe it's from 4 to 6, and AM is, I don't know what time AM would be in this, but I mean, I've said this before, it doesn't pass the eyeball test. I mean, I believe that the numbers are the numbers and there's calculations, and when you put the numbers in, that's what gets computed. It's not what's actually happening. So I'll have to figure out how I reconcile that ultimately, I'm sure, but I guess I just needed you to walk me through the numbers, and you have, so thank you.
Sure.
Any other board members with questions? I just have a couple clarifications. Mr. Stump, you explained one about the parentheses. We could go down two more pages, I think, to page 38 on this exhibit. Just to confirm. So, like Sand Hill, the second row down, Sand Hill Road, eastbound right, there's just one number in parentheses. That's proposed because this is a brand new intersection?
Correct.
Okay. And going, make it easier, going back up to page 36, and, looking at, let's say, at the Governor Road Cherry Drive intersection, second row down, Governor Road, eastbound through. The numbers under no build, build, and build with improvements. They come from basically a computer program that you pump data into, correct?
That's correct.
And the data includes traffic counts, or is it just all theoretical?
It's based on the traffic counts that were obtained, and then additional traffic is added on, so that's more theoretical based on the development traffic or other background growth.
And it's looking at the queue length on average for the busiest hour in the AM and the busiest hour in the PM.
Yeah, those are supposed to be 95th percentile queues, which generally represent, you know, kind of the longest queue that you might get in a typical weekday.
Okay, so that it's the worst case scenario, not the average scenario.
That is correct.
And looking at the first row on this chart, Governor Road eastbound left, under AM 2027, no build and build, you have numbers of 4 feet and 3 feet. Obviously, there's no car. Does that mean generally there's no car there, and maybe there's one car in the hour?
Correct, yeah, maybe one every other cycle, so it's often it's zero cars, and then there'll be one, so it just kind of takes that. And, you know, that kind of 25 foot per vehicle and uses that, low volume movement.
So then that confuses me. Because you said before, like the next row down where it says, 363, 406, as the 95th percentile worst case scenario, I would think for the first row, eastbound left, the worst case scenario would be like 25 feet. That'd be one car. So if it's not an average, why do you get 4 and 3 as a 95th percentile? Like,
maybe I shouldn't say it's not the maximum queue that's ever going to see, right? Then that would be maybe a full 25 foot. 95th percentile is more of a statistical analysis
it's almost saying that maybe 99 times out of 100 there's no car there. And then once out of the hour, and therefore statistically makes it 3 feet long.
Yeah, so that eastbound left movement, for instance, has 4 vehicles in an hour. So the vast majority of that hour, that lane's going to be empty.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. McNair, any follow-up?
No follow-up.
Mr. Stump, you're done. Congratulations. Mr. McNair, do you have any further witnesses?
No additional evidence, no witnesses. The township would rest.
I can't remember. Have you moved your exhibits into the record?
I believe I did, but if not, I'll remove them.
Okay. Any objections to any of the township exhibits, exhibit T1 through, I believe, T7?
No.
Hearing none, we are going to move on. As we have been doing all along, Mr. Christ, you're now next up.
For witnesses?
Yes.
I had said that I would give my time to, he had a witness that had to go.
That works for me.
Places with him.
I have a brief witness who's been traveling here.
That's perfectly fine, Mr. Greenberg.
Is there not a microphone for the witnesses table?
Sorry, I just walked back in the truck. Yeah. Where you can steal Mr.
Hi, I'm Lori Duff.
Okay, I'll hold on to your
microphone.
You're going to have to wait until your attorney asks you.
Excuse me.
Yeah, swear in, too.
That's right.
Yeah. For the record, Edward Greenberg for KinderCare. Ma'am, Mr. Nelson.
I'll swear in the witness before we start.
Of course.
Ma'am, would you raise your right hand to be sworn? Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
Thank you. And if you would state and spell your full name.
Sure. It's Lori, L-O-R-I, N-E-F-F.
Ms. Neff, where do you live?
I live at 106 Pebbleside Lane in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
By whom are you employed?
KinderCare.
Is my mic on? Yes.
You have to push the button.
Button. You turn green. Oh, there you go.
Green comes on.
Thank you. You're employed by KinderCare?
Yes.
In what capacity?
I am their district leader.
For what area?
Central Pennsylvania.
And what does that include?
That includes the York area, Lancaster, Hershey, Westchester, Downingtown, and Hexton.
So there is a KinderCare in Hershey on Cherry Drive. Are you responsible for that location?
Yes, I am.
When did KinderCare first open that location?
1982.
So about 41 years ago?
Correct, yes.
How many children are currently enrolled there?
We have 107 children.
Is that near capacity?
Close. Our capacity is 120.
How many different families send their children to this center, approximately?
90 families.
Does this center have any children that are on subsidies?
Yes, we do.
Does the center have any children who are special needs children?
Yes, we do.
About how many?
About 15 children.
Are any of the parents of the children who attend this KinderCare center employees of Penn State Hershey Medical Center?
Yes.
Can you give us an estimate of the percentage?
About 50%.
50?
Yes. Yes.
How would you characterize the supply and demand for child care in the Hershey area?
Competitive.
Is there a new competitor coming soon?
Yes, there is.
Would you tell us briefly about that?
Sure. Catherine Hershey. They are opening 6 centers. Hershey is due to open in 2024. Also, they're opening in Middletown, Pennsylvania. We have 3 in Lancaster County that are coming, and Harrisburg. But Hershey is the next one that is going to open.
Does the KinderCare Hershey Center employ people who live in and near Derry Township?
Yes, we do.
Last, can you give us any information about the reaction of the parents of the children that attend the Hershey KinderCare to the proposal in this matter, the use of a map that runs a road through the center, what we've been calling Exhibit A11.
I'm going to object. If they have other parents that have a reaction that they want to present, they would have to come tonight or come to the hearing to present that reaction. Regardless, I don't think it's relevant. And two, you know, we've been at this for 9 months now, and we have consistently said there is no road proposed through the KinderCare property. I don't know how many times we have to go over that point. There is no road proposed, and if they have reactions to a road that's not proposed that they want to have show up and present, they can. I don't think it's relevant.
May I respond to both points?
Yes.
Briefly. First, if the objection is hearsay, we are not offering this for the truth of the matter asserted. The fact that people have asked questions that have expressed concerns, that's an act. That's not testimony offered for the truth of the matter asserted. So as a matter of law, it's not hearsay. And secondly, it was the applicant who put in the map that has a road running through the center, and they've also presented evidence that their center is designed to mesh with that map. So I would submit that testimony about the reaction of our parents is relevant, and it's one question. It's going to take about 15 seconds to answer, and we'll be done with it.
Since I fully agree that this road is not part of this application, and I think that's going on the record, that being said, we've omitted tons of evidence regarding it, so I'm not going to cut it off at this point in time, especially for one question. And as with everything, one, just for your sake, for a zoning hearing, hearsay doesn't apply. It's only what is relevant or not relevant. And as far as relevance goes, the board is going to weigh, each piece of evidence as to its relevance. That being said, objection overruled. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Ms. Neff, I'm going to ask you again. Can you tell us anything about the reaction of the parents of the children that attend this center to what has been presented before this board?
Yes, of course. And this started several months ago, too, but lots of concern as far as having to, if something happens to the center, displacing their children. They formed relationships with their teachers. That's important in a child, in a child's development. We have had families here at some of the hearings, but yes, there is definitely a concern that their home for their children won't be there.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Strong. We'll start with you. Cross examination, sir.
Good evening.
Hi.
So you're here in your capacity as an employee of KinderCare to provide testimony tonight?
Yes.
And as I understand your testimony, it's to present to the board that there are parents of children enrolled in the KinderCare that have concerns about a proposed road that would go through the KinderCare building. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Those are all the questions I have.
Thank you. Mr. McNair?
No questions.
Mr. Don't see him. Mr. Getz?
No questions.
Mr. Winter?
No questions.
Ms. Beans?
No questions.
Mr. Miller?
No.
Okay. Mr. Chris, do you have any questions for this witness?
No questions for this witness.
Thank you. Ms. Newman?
No questions.
And I believe Mr. Stang and Mr. Koyman are not here. Mr. Hitchcock?
Nope.
And you're, one last. Mr. Green, any follow-up, sir?
No.
You're done, ma'am. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Greenberg, do you have any other witnesses at this point in time?
Well, I took this witness out of turn. I do want to call another witness, but I can wait my turn.
Okay. Mr. Chris, does that work for you?
Fine. I mean, if he wants to finish his witnesses, I don't have a problem with that.
Mr. Greenberg?
As I had indicated in...
is this for the applicant you're going to recall? Okay. Mr. You fine with this, Mr. Strong? You have called him now.
I guess I'll lay a little groundwork with respect to my thoughts on the request. As I understand it, the request is that Mr. Greenberg wants to recall Mr. Gates to provide testimony. Obviously, Mr. Gates provided extensive testimony already over the course of two hearings in October and November of last year. He testified probably around 6 hours already, and everyone here had an opportunity to ask him questions on cross-examination over the course of those two hearings. We introduced 17 exhibits through Mr. Gates' testimony, and so recalling him as a witness, I'm going to object to any questions that are on subjects that Mr. Gates has already provided testimony and that are within the scope of the testimony that was provided previously by Mr. Gates. I have requested an opportunity to understand what the questions would be so that we wouldn't have to do this during the hearing. That request went unanswered. So I understand he wants to recall him, but I also want the board to understand I'm going to object to any question that's on a topic he's already testified about because he had an opportunity to ask those questions previously.
Mr. Greenberg, could you clarify what the focus of this recall examination is going to be?
Sure. Since October 24th and November 21st, when Mr. Gates testified, there's been a lot of evidence that came in that we all heard. And it would have been possible to ask Mr. Gates about any of that evidence when he was testifying the first time, because he was the first witness. So my questions are limited to matters that we've heard about since then, and now that this is my case, I want to call him as my witness, as I'm across, to ask him questions about things that have come up since. I think it's a proper request and a proper procedure.
Okay. We recognize that, and Mr. Strong, we recognize your concerns, and you object as you would. Nay. Mr. Gates? And Mr. Gates, just to remind you, we're still under oath.
Okay.
Oh, actually, I guess strictly speaking, he was released, so we probably should swear him again.
All right, I don't mind. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Gates.
Hello.
Since you testified on October 24th and November 21st, 2022, you've been present at every hearing that has taken place in this matter, correct?
I have.
You've heard the testimony from Linlow's civil engineer, Mr. Rogowski, traffic engineer, Mr. Creasy, architect, Mr. Tilley, the Sheets engineer, Mr. Lyncha, and the Kitty Academy VPA Construction, Mr. Camarada, right?
That sounds accurate.
And you've also heard the Derry Township engineer testify, that's Mr. Stone, correct?
That's correct.
And those witnesses have given testimony about how the site will function with the four different buildings that you've proposed for the development, correct?
To some extent, yes.
Well, some of that testimony about how the site will function was offered by your witnesses, by Linlow's witnesses, and some by the township's witness. Is that right?
Correct.
In particular, we heard about the likelihood of conflicts in the section of the parking lot near the proposed daycare center building. True?
Some testified to that.
We heard that pedestrians will be required to walk through the parking lot to get from one building to another due to the lack of sidewalks in some areas, right?
We are here on a master plan and conditional use application. The site plan is not finished. We're not here on land development. So what you're looking at is far from a finished product. We're here simply for conditional use.
We heard assumptions about the traffic that will be generated by the medical office building, with the caveat that the tenants and their practices are not yet known. True?
Correct.
And we heard about measures that might be taken to protect apartments from headlights of cars using the fuel islands. Yes?
I don't know what the question was.
We heard about measures that might be taken to protect the apartments from headlights of cars using the fuel islands.
Again, the site plan is not finished. We're not here on a land development plan. We're here on a conditional use application.
There's
a lot of elements that are not finished.
Okay. I don't want to argue with you. I'm just trying to bring you back to some of the evidence that we've heard in this matter. Okay? So, was my statement correct that we heard about measures that could be taken to keep lights out of apartments?
We heard, but I'm not agreeing with it. I'm telling you my answer.
I'm not asking you to agree with it. I'm just asking about what we've heard. I'll keep going. We heard about cars stacking on Fishburne Road, waiting to turn onto 322, right? There are various opinions about how much of a problem that is or isn't.
Correct? I'm going to object. We can't recap what we spent our time together doing 3 hours a night since October of last year. If there are questions to be asked that are on subjects that Mr. Gates was not previously testifying to,
let's have those questions. If there are none, then let's move on to the next witness.
Yeah, I would ask Mr. Greenberg if you could just start asking him your substantive questions. If he doesn't remember something, at that point in time, it would be proper to try to refresh his recollection. But if we could move past his opening part and let's get into the meat of things, please.
Mr. Gates, initially, in 2018, there was a proposal for a Sheetz gas station and a pharmacy, just two uses on this property. Is that right?
I wasn't involved back then.
But do you know that's a fact?
I wasn't involved back then. I acquired the land in 2022. I'm sorry, 2022.
So you never saw or heard about a prior proposal?
I'm not familiar with it.
Okay. Was there ever a proposal for there to be three uses on this property instead of four?
I don't know.
Can we have exhibit 810? Well, there's been a lot of water over the dam since then, which is what I was just trying to establish.
Mr. Strong, I think we're going to have to wait to see the specific questions.
Sir, you estimate the value of the completed development to be about $25,300,000. Is that correct?
So now I'll make my objection. We've already introduced Exhibit A-10 through Mr. Gates' testimony. You provide testimony on it. Every attorney that's representing a party here had an opportunity to ask him questions about this study that was introduced. I'm going to object to any questions about it.
So noted. As of right now, the objections are overruled. But if you can start tying it into something new, please, Mr. Greenberg.
Yes, that's what the graph says, $25,300,000.
Now, we learned from the Kitty Academy witness that you called that he's going to be leasing the building. Is that correct?
Correct.
And will that lease allow you to sell the building and transfer the lease to someone else?
Yes.
Is that your plan?
I don't know.
It could be.
Could not.
And the Sheetz also, we heard about how the Sheetz is going to operate. Is that going to be rented? Is that going to be leased to Sheetz or sold to Sheetz?
Leased.
So Linlow Governor Crossing will always have the option to sell the development in whole or in part, even subject to the leases.
Correct.
Is there any reason why you cannot develop this property with less than four buildings?
Again, I'm going to object. Mr. Gates testified for over 6 hours already on all of these topics. It was an opportunity in 2022 to ask these questions. If he didn't ask them, that's on him, not on us to go back and rehash it, 7 months later, 8 months later.
Mr. Nelson, there's been a lot of testimony since Mr. Gates first testified about the safety benefits of having fewer buildings. I'm just going back to that and asking him why he can't develop this with fewer than four buildings.
And there was an opportunity to ask every subsequent witness who presented that testimony questions on cross-examination as well. We're spinning our wheels.
At this point in time, the objections are overruled, but the board recognizes Mr. Strong's issues here, and we do not want to rehoe these roads. So continue on for now, but we understand what Mr. Strong is saying, and we do appreciate it.
Sir?
Can you re-ask the question?
Is there any reason why you can't proceed with this development with three buildings instead of four?
it becomes an economic analysis. The cost of the land in Hershey is expensive. PennDOT is requiring extensive amount of road improvements, which are going to cost in the millions of dollars. You have to look at the economics of what's happening at on and off the site. It's difficult. I mean, theoretically, you could put a park here, but there would be no money to pay for the road. So if you want $3.5 or $4 million worth of road work to be completed, which is what PennDOT's requiring, you have to have a sufficient amount of economic activity on the property in order to support that. Or nobody would do it.
Is it economically feasible to do this development with less than four buildings? Economically feasible for Linwell?
I don't believe so.
Have you done the calculation?
Yes.
Could you take us through it?
Again, hard to object to this. What is the relevance of this?
I don't think the board needs to. We'll take Mr. Gates at his word. We don't need to go through that at this point in time.
All right, last question. Sir, if you were going to eliminate one building and try to maintain the feasibility of the project, which one would you eliminate?
I can't make that decision.
That's all I have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Greenberg. Mr. Greenberg, are you done with your case in chief?
Yes.
Excellent. You did not introduce any further exhibits. I think all your exhibits have been already moved in.
Yes.
So we're good to go. Thank you very much, sir. Well, that being said, Mr. Gates, you are up for cross-examination again. I know you're looking forward to it.
I'm having so much fun.
Yes, I am. So first off, we'll make it easy, is Mr. Strong, he should not go too hard on you.
I have no questions.
Mr. McKinney.
No questions.
Mr. Christ.
No questions.
Mr. Getz.
Just have a couple based on what Mr. Gates said. Good evening, Dave Getz.
Just easy questions.
Well, I promise. You said the plan is far from finished. This is only a conditional use application. What specifically are you seeking in the conditional use?
I believe the conditional use includes the sheets as a major fueling station. It includes the medical use in one building. It includes the daycare center, and it includes the mixed use apartments. I think those are the four.
And it includes the master plan, true.
Yes, the master plan as a whole. Yes.
Well, isn't it correct that in this township a master plan approval is considered to be a preliminary plan, and then you move to final?
I think it's a technicality. We're doing so much extensive planning. There's no really no need to do a preliminary. We go right to the final.
My point is, though, you testified that the plan is far from finished product. If that's the case, then shouldn't it be corrected and finalized here so the board is reviewing what's essentially a preliminary plan along with the master plan conditional use?
No, I mean, there's a lot of details that go into a plan to make it final. One major component would be the NPDES permit. We haven't delved into any of the stormwater facilities, where they're going to be located, the topography of the site, how the water will drain, both on and off the site. There's a lot of nuances to the plan, there's a lot of details that aren't in this plan. There's no point in doing them if we don't first get approval of the master plan and the various conditional uses. It would just be a waste of time and effort and money.
Are those nuances typically taken care of in a preliminary plan application?
Perhaps they would be. I think the master plan goes way beyond what a preliminary plan would do, in the sense that we're doing architectural designs of buildings, their location, their cohesiveness on the site, and the cohesiveness of the architecture. I mean, there are things that we're doing as part of the master plan conditional use that would not be part of the preliminary plan. So there's differences both more or less complicated than a preliminary plan.
Right, I understand that the master plan process requires a lot of architecturals and that sort of thing that, that a typical land development plan would not require at all. But my concern is if this board approves your conditional use and your master plan with a plan that's far from a finished product, without stormwater even being calculated at this point from your testimony, that when it comes to a final plan, a lot of those things, because you're entitled to a final plan approval if it's consistent with your preliminary, a lot of those things won't ever be addressed.
No, it's not true. I mean, the NBDES will be handled by the Dauphin County Conservation District. That will be a completely independent analysis. The HOP is an independent analysis that will impact at least the perimeter of our site. And, you know, the final plan is going to have to go back through Planning Commission and back up to the board for final approval. And all those details are going to get worked out.
But you're entitled, under the law, you're entitled to a final plan approval that's consistent with your preliminary plan.
I guess. I think you're kind of going in circles.
My point is, though, that those things should be addressed now as part of the master plan conditional use process.
Now, the master plan has very specific requirements, and I think we've met those.
I have no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Getz. Mr. Winter.
Hello, Mr. Beans.
How are you doing?
Good. Just to follow up on what Mr. Getz was asking, I just want to go back. Your testimony earlier was that, in response to Mr. Greenberg, the site plan is not finished, and we're here for conditional use. Is that correct? That was your testimony?
Correct.
So to follow up with what Mr. Getz had just asked, if the Board of Supervisors approves a plan that you have submitted, which is a conditional use plan, they will not be able to take into consideration the NPDES plan. Is that correct?
I think typically an approval of a final land development plan would include a condition that the conservation district approves the stormwater. And I'm fairly sure the township engineer also looks at it.
Okay. And I'm just trying to understand the difference between the conditional use plan, which is before the Board of Supervisors now, and when a final plan is going to be submitted. And what would the final plan include that is not in the conditional plan at present?
I believe. We've spent a year working on this now, countless hours of testimony. The master plan, per the township ordinance, has a very specific criteria for the master plan. It doesn't include things like sidewalks or there's a lot of details that aren't on the master plan. I think we've gone way beyond what a master plan would normally require.
So is it possible that whatever final visual plan is presented to the board, the developer could end up building something slightly different? Buildings could be in different locations, facades could appear different, setbacks could be different, is that true?
I don't believe so. I think the bulk of the plan is per the conditional use. I think the uses are being approved.
But when does the Board of Supervisors ever get to see the final plan, the as-built plan?
I agree. We're a little off subject. We're kind of delving into legal questions to witness who clearly is, while he's an expert at development, these are interpretations of the MPC and how this works. I think we need to move on.
Well, I think the community would like to know. This is the first time that I've heard this tonight. The site
and Mr. Winter, you're hearing from a witness who's not represented the township. It's the township that would make these decisions, not Mr. Gates. So Mr. Gates could tell you something that's completely wrong. So I think we can move off of this into an area that Mr. Gates is more familiar with.
All right. And I think you testified that, that you have economic concerns, that if you didn't have four buildings on this 7-acre site, this might not work for you financially.
Correct.
And you indicated that there might be $3.5 to $4 million estimated in cost of road work.
Correct.
Now, out of that 3.5 to 4 million, isn't it true that a million point one would be coming from the medical center in Penn State?
No.
Who is that 1.1 million going to come from?
I'm going to object. We're, again, far afield from cross-examination of Mr. Gates by Mr. Greenberg.
He testified that he's going to spend 3.5 to 4 million.
Objection overruled. Question can be answered.
There isn't $1.1 million. I'm not sure what he's asking for.
Is there any contribution coming to Linwell from Penn State and Hershey Medical Center from any third-party source whatsoever?
No.
So Linwell is completely paying for the cost of the road work?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. No further questions, sir.
Thank you. Ms. Means?
Good.
How are you?
Hanging in there. Good. So, my first time, so if I step out of that, I'm sure you'll tell me. And that means A to Z building. So, your property would not have any value if there wasn't access to that property, correct? I mean, if your development wouldn't have any value, if you couldn't get into the sheets, if you couldn't access any of this property, it would have very little value, correct?
I suppose.
Okay. So, do you understand our concern down in Fishburne that this plan would remove access to our properties and therefore devalue them?
I disagree with your assessment that we're stopping access to your property. I don't think we are.
Do you want me to jump in before you, Mr.
Yeah.
Thank you. Ms. Means, mm-hmm. At this point in time, your cross-examination is very narrowly focused on the subjects that Mr. Greenberg has raised. So if you have questions regarding the subject Mr. Greenberg raised, that's perfectly appropriate. But we can't rehash things outside of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Miller?
No question.
Okay. Ms. Newell?
No comments.
Mr. And I think the only other person here is Mr. Hitchcock.
No questions.
Thank you. Mr. Greenberg, any follow-up?
No.
Now you're excused, Mr. Gates. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That being said, we will take a break for 10 minutes.